listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people who make them and do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates or advertisers. Hi, folks. Welcome to The Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous planet, thank you for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. Those of you joining us for the very first time, welcome aboard. We're glad to have you, and I hope you enjoy your visit here tonight and make it a habit. It's a good habit to get into. Be sure you get over to kevinsmithshow.com and subscribe to the K-Files e-zine. Now, actually, the way you have to subscribe right now, because we're still working on recoding some pages that quit working when iPowerWeb, our host company, changed some of the protocols. So we're recoding some of the pages. Right now, in order for you to subscribe to the K-Files e-zine, it's absolutely free. But you send an email to kfiles@kevinsmithshow.com. And just one line in there that says, I want to subscribe. Okay, that's all you have to do. And we'll manually subscribe you. Hopefully tomorrow we'll have that fixed. We're working on it. Well, last night we tried an experiment. You remember? The experiment was we were testing Skype. And it was successful for some people. For some people it was not. And we know why it was not, so we want to tell you so you can be successful in using Skype tonight if you are outside of the USA or Canada. Now, the reason I say that is because for the USA and Canada, we have the toll-free line for you to call in on, all right? And we pay for the call, so there's no reason not to call us. If you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada and you want to call in and talk to us when we open the phone lines, we'll open the Skype line as well. What you have to do is you have to turn your player off. You're listening to the show, right? You have to turn the player off. Now, you might say, well, yeah, but how will I know when you're ready for me to be on the air? Well, you'll hear me via Skype. You'll hear me say, caller, you're live on The Kevin Smith Show. Okay, but you have to turn the player off, and there are a couple of reasons. One reason is most computers simply cannot handle the transmit and receive at the same time. You're transmitting with Skype and receiving with the player, and most computers can't do that, and it just gets all choppy, and we can't understand anything. Well, there's another reason on your end of the equation. This broadcast, what you're hearing right now, actually was said almost a minute ago. It's you're not hearing it immediate. You're hearing a delay, okay? And there are reasons for that, as you may well imagine. So you'll be sitting there trying to listen to the show, and I will be saying to your ear through Skype, caller, you're live on The Kevin Smith Show, and you'll still be hearing that last call via the player. It's going to confuse you. Plus, it's going to, when I bring you online, it's going to set up something that is called an audio feedback loop, and it will begin to echo, and it will echo and echo and echo and echo so badly that it will obliterate all other audio. So you have to turn your player off when you Skype, all right? And then it will work. Well, we're going to revisit that latest Phoenix Lights incident where they said it was flares tied to helium balloons. Bill Nell has reported something in his newsletter that blows that completely out of the water. Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com. Alien Seeker News has blasted off and is providing a new and important resource for everyone interested in UFOs, aliens, alien abductions, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, and more. Featuring five of the top UFO radio talk shows, lots of information and articles in free forums, Alien Seeker News has launched on its journey to greatness. Go to AlienSeekerNews.com, register for the free forums, and get the classic Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe as a free ebook. Join today. Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com. Did you know the Kevin Smith Show selects one of its very best shows each week and turns it into a free podcast? Well, it's true. You can download free Kevin Smith Show podcast right now and get a free fresh podcast each week. Do you want to start building your own library of Kevin Smith shows? All you have to do is visit our website at kevinsmithshow.com and click the free podcast link. They're yours for the download. We are back, and I think all of you are familiar with Bill Nell. He's been with us before. He's with us again tonight. And I want to set this up so that you understand what it is that we're talking about. On April the 21st, while I was on the air, there were five red lights that were seen in the sky above Phoenix. The airport said, we don't know what they are. Luke Air Force Base said, we don't know what they are. Nobody denied that they were there. Everyone just said, we don't know what they are. Well, within a day or two, the local news here began showing this story of a guy saying, it was my next-door neighbor. He tied some traffic flares to some balloons filled with helium, and he launched them from his backyard. I watched him. That's what the guy said on TV. And while I am not prepared to say these are UFOs, these are extraterrestrial craft. I don't know what they were. Well, that makes them UFOs, right? They're unidentified flying objects. I have said right from the beginning, hold your horses. You can't tie traffic flares to a helium-filled balloon, even if you could launch it. It would. The story was that he used fishing line, that monofilament line. Traffic flares would melt that. They would just vaporize it. And the flare would then, burning, still burning, fall to the ground, if you ever got it launched. Bill has published something in his newsletter that really, as far as I'm concerned, blows this story about helium-filled balloons way out of the sky. Bill, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Well, thank you, Kevin. It's always a pleasure.
Bill, tell us a little bit about who these people are that... let's just back up. Tell us about the report. What is this report? How did you get it?
Okay, well, shortly after the April 21st event, I took a really good look at the video that was filmed and some of the stills from it and started talking to people because I received a number of emails from Phoenix. Of course, I'd lived there for years. So one of the things that concerned me was looking at the video, you know, I didn't see anything particularly strange in terms of any kind of signs of a hoax or anything. I mean, I've seen many different photographs of strange lights, video of strange lights. So, you know, normally when something is hoaxed, you know, it's like the old dry cleaner bags and candle trick. You know, it's just, it's something that you get to see and you kind of recognize after a while. And they didn't strike me as being something that someone hoaxed. So, and, you know, I think most people felt that way. But at any rate, I started getting all these different emails from people, including some people that lived fairly close to Luke Air Force Base. Now, one of the problems that first came up was the people, I guess at least one spokesman, possibly more, from Luke said that there were no, you know, they didn't have anything in the sky that night that would account for these particular lights. So, all right. The problem was when they said they really didn't have any military aircraft in the sky. Now, I'm assuming they're talking about fighter aircraft because, you know, it's Luke Air Force Base, and I'm fairly certain that, you know, transport aircraft and so on take off and land from there all the time. But let's give them the benefit of the doubt and say that that's what they meant. Well, I heard from a number of people that said they did indeed see fighter aircraft taking off from Luke that night. So that was my first inkling that something wasn't going right. I also got a little nervous because, you know, whenever they don't use the old training exercises thing as a explanation, I'm thinking to myself, well, what's next? You know, when's the next shoe going to drop? Then the other problem that came up was we had the story about the air traffic controllers out at Sky Harbor. They had said they'd seen the lights, and yet, you know, the following day, and by the way, people should understand the timeline. This all unfolded very quickly from Monday night to Tuesday afternoon. It's actually one of the quickest responses to anything I've ever seen in, you know, my almost 40 years now of UFO research. And by Tuesday afternoon, the FAA was basically saying that they would not allow the air traffic controllers to comment on this because it was their policy to do so, not to allow them to comment. So I thought, well, you know, maybe there's some little unwritten law somewhere, some, you know, tiny little codicil that's allowing them to get away with this. Fine. But what really did concern me was they said that they were refusing to investigate it. Now, ever since 2001 and the terrorist attacks that occurred in that year, 9/11, the FAA has, by stated and written policy, said that they will investigate anything that's reported to them out of the ordinary in the skies over the United States and its territories. Now, the fact that they didn't goes completely against their policies. So that was another warning sign to me that, well, you know what? They're going to come up with something. Something's going to give, and they're going to explain this whole thing away. And it didn't take long. By Tuesday evening, that's the day after the lights, we had someone come forward and say, you know what? I saw my neighbor launching helium balloons with road flares, you know, off the ground. Well, that didn't sit right with me because, you know, in the past, I've seen people try and hoax things. And first of all, helium balloons aren't all that what they're cracked up to be. People think you can just kind of tie a flare on there and let her fly. It really doesn't work that way. And you know what? Most helium balloons can't carry, you know, they can't carry a huge amount of weight. But I figured, all right, let's see what happens. I wrote an article on everything I knew to that point, and I asked for people to comment on it. So a lot of different people commented. They chimed in. I heard from a fella who worked with professional fireworks. You know, I heard from all these different people that had some level of experience with flares, explosive balloons, and, you know, different things. And none of them, not one single person said to me, this is something that probably made sense, that it probably was a hoax. They all said, you know, hey, do you know how difficult it would be for one person to get this thing off the ground and then keep it flying for as long as it did? And, you know, I'm not an expert on flares, and I'm not an expert on balloons. But one thing that happened that I thought was really very cool was that Cherie Tidal and Nathan Morrison, two people that received my newsletter, read the op-ed and that I wrote about this, and they decided to go ahead and kind of investigate this thing on their own. And I thought, well, you know what? This is cool because they're going to try to recreate the hoax. So, all right, they started doing a little bit of investigation. And they came up with some interesting things. First of all, they decided that mathematically, and I'm kind of quoting from their report, a latex balloon of the size the hoaxer claimed he used would not be able to lift the flare off the ground, let alone be able to obtain the altitude seen by all the witnesses in the video and pictures. And that was one of the first things that I really was impressed with, because one of my problems was I've seen road flares, you know. I've seen them reflect off of surfaces. People have used all – I mean, a balloon's a reflective surface, so you could say they were reflecting off of that. But the brightness of the video and the stills from it go way beyond that. Then they said a flare tied to a latex balloon with fishing line would melt the fishing line before it ever got off the ground. I mean, they just came up with all this stuff. And another thing that they pointed out, and I thought this was something that really blew me away because I never even thought of it. You know, of course, when this happened, and you being in that area, you know that it's been very dry in the Phoenix area.
Oh, yeah.
So, right. So technically speaking, doing something like this person did is pretty much, you know, illegal. I mean, you just can't go ahead and do something like that. So they actually reported this incident to a councilwoman, to the fire department, to the city council. Although no one's really taken any action on it because it kind of falls between the cracks, they had a really good point. So, you know, the report is not so much my work. What it is, it's the result of my initial questioning of the explanations, which I thought were dubious, for the more recent Phoenix lights as being road flares or some type of hoaxed phenomenon. And they took it and they ran with it, and they did a heck of a good job.
Yes, they did. I have that report, their report, which you reproduced in your newsletter. I have got it. I've got it open in front of me right now. And it is absolutely, in my estimation, a professional investigation. There's not any speculation in it. They took the facts, or the alleged facts, as were presented in the news media, and they experimented with it. They ran some experiments to see, will that work? And what they discovered is, it will not work. The balloons of the type that the individual is claimed to have used will not lift the flares off the ground. They just don't have the lift to get these flares off the ground. One of the things you just mentioned, you know, that it sort of fell through the cracks, nobody's investigating. Well, I mentioned that on the show. I said the thing that screams to me that the story about it being a hoax is itself a hoax is that nobody seems to be interested in investigating this crime. Now, it is a crime.
That's right.
Here is why it is a crime. As you drive down the highways here, they have signs up that tell you, if you're smoking, use your ashtray. Don't throw it out. It's not because of litter. It's because of wildfire. There are restrictions. If you're going to barbecue, you can use a propane barbecue grill, but you can't use an open flame like charcoal or wood. And, you know, there's a reason for these things. The reason is called we live in a tinderbox out here. You've heard me say that this place looks like Mars with cactus on it. And it does, but throw in a few tumbleweeds and you know, some really dry other vegetation, and it's sparse. But that's what makes the fire move so rapidly, is because it's not a heavy growth, it's a sparse growth, and so the fire moves just in seconds. It just moves an amazing distance. And then, of course, we'll engulf structures and so forth. So we have rather strict laws out here about lighting a match or a cigarette lighter or using anything with a flame on it. And you lived out here, so you know about that. In your newsletter, it was interesting that there was a councilwoman that responded to questions about why is there no investigation. And there was a fire chief or a fire marshal or somebody with the fire department that responded. Tell us about that.
Well, see, you know, this is a very, very important point. First of all, let me say that when I wrote the original article, I wrote it, I believe, on Tuesday at some point, and I probably had it out by Tuesday night. What I did do was I put in a call to the Phoenix Fire Department, the Phoenix Police Department, a number of different agencies, including the FAA, see if I could get a comment on this from pretty much anyone, you know. And, you know, the moment you say you're calling and you're writing an article about UFOs, you know, you get the click on the phone, or they just kind of transfer you around a while and then eventually pretend you don't exist and never get back to you. But I did try to get comments from some of the you know, the fire chiefs or someone in the department on this, and there was nothing. But see, now one thing great about this report was they did in fact get a response. Now the councilwoman, she actually writes to Cherie, again, one of the people that did the report. She says, Cherie, I spoke with my contact over in the police department regarding the Phoenix Lights incident, and Sergeant Dwyer said that, yes, the gentleman would be charged with something, but at this point, it's out of the Phoenix Police Department's hands. Now, so they're saying the police, and rightfully, I mean, it's not. I don't know that it's really a police department matter. It could be, it might not be, it might be more in the range of a fire marshal, you know, I don't know. Then she goes on to say the feds and the FAA are looking at what charges to bring against him. Now, that's untrue. That's untrue because the FAA has dramatically said time and time again, and the last time that I was able to get any kind of an email from them, now, of course, they have emailed me since that time, was on the, today's May 20th. The last one I got was on May 14th, in which they reiterated that they will not be investigating the April 21st Phoenix Lights incident. They consider the matter, you know, either closed or not in. I don't know if it's in their jurisdiction, but they're just not going to investigate it. However, now apparently, this councilwoman says that they are looking into what charges they could bring against him. Now, I don't know that that's true. You know, there's a lot of odd things going on here. Let me kind of back up, and let me tell people, too. If you go to my website at ufoguy.com, you can see some of the photos that Cherie and her partner used to basically show the experiments that they did with the helium balloons and the flares. So you can actually see them, what they actually did, in addition to reading the entire report. And I definitely suggest that everybody read this report before you make a final decision, you know, personally, on whether you want to believe that this happened, didn't happen, or was just a big hoax. But one of the problems that came up with this is, you know, almost immediately after the after this happened, I asked a friend of mine who lived in Phoenix to go over and talk to. Now, let me say, I don't know if I'm pronouncing the man's name right, but I believe it's Lino Melo. That's the way it's written. I don't know if that's a correct pronunciation or not. But, you know, we found out where the guy lived, so I sent him over there. He went to the person's home, and the person seemed to be home but didn't want to answer the door. Fine. So then he went next door to the neighbor, and we're assuming this is the neighbor who allegedly was the hoaxer that launched the balloons, and they basically weren't home. So finally, a few doors down to the right, somebody was home, and they said a bunch of interesting things. They said, well, first of all, they know the neighbor in question, Lino's neighbor, and Lino's neighbor wasn't even home that night. That was number one. That was disturbing. The other thing was, Cherie verified this, by the way, in her report. She apparently went out there as well and talked to neighbors. They all told her, look, or had someone go out there. They basically said that none of the neighbors in that area saw balloons going up that night, and most of them were out. It was, you know, it was a fairly nice night, and that nobody saw anything. So,
and let me explain, you know, something about, let me explain, when you say it was a fairly nice night, let me explain. Folks, today, here in Phoenix, it was 110 degrees.
Right.
Okay? So, I mean, we, and this is not really summer yet, okay? We're going to get a lot hotter before it cools off again. And so those last few days of spring, which April 21st certainly is in that period of time, those last few days of spring, the evenings are nice, really paradise nice. And, I mean, you know, you've got temperatures of, you know, anywhere from 75 to 85 degrees. And for us, that's really nice. That's cool. And so people are out. People go outside when it's like that because they know that this blazing hot weather is coming. And so here in Phoenix at that time of the year, people are out in droves. They're in their backyards. They're having barbecues. They're visiting friends. They're riding bicycles. Not so much now. But not in August, but in April, yes.
Well, I know that the gentleman that I sent over to talk to them, a good friend of mine, he came out and he said to me, look, these people, they didn't just say that people were out, but they were sitting in their own backyard at the time this supposedly happened. And they told me in no uncertain terms, they have a very unrestricted view of the sky from that area. And they certainly would have noticed some kind of balloons, you know, going up in the sky from their neighborhood, just maybe three or four doors down, you know, from them. They would have seen it. And like I said, they do know the person in question that was allegedly the hoaxer and said he was definitely not home on that particular evening. And then some other stuff came out that was very, very interesting. For example, Lino Melo, and again, I apologize if I'm mispronouncing the gentleman's name, is in the military. More importantly, he's actually in the Navy. And I find that very, very interesting. You know, again, you have to, you know, you kind of learn to get a sixth sense about this stuff over the years from an investigative standpoint. Things either add up or they don't, or they add up in an unusual way. And in this particular case, with the April 21st Phoenix Lights incident, I just thought it very strange that the folks at Luke Air Force Base didn't take any responsibility. You know, they made it very clear that the whatever lights were up there, it had nothing to do with them. I thought that was odd, and it seemed like nobody wanted to chime in on this. Normally, there's an explanation almost right away. Well, we were doing dropping flares out there, you know, like the famous March 13th, 1997 Phoenix lights. When they didn't, I smelled a rat. I said, you know what? They've got something better in mind. And sure enough, this guy comes out of the blue, and so conveniently and so fast. You know, it was unbelievable how fast this explanation came out. But again, the facts simply don't add up.
Okay, you're right. Here's something that does, though, and that is we're into a break. And we'll continue when we come back. I told you, folks, this story, this report, blows the hoax story out of the water.
the days before you came along. I'd be painting perfect pictures on my canvas of years to be you. Around I went looking through my windows out, nothing but you. My whole world narrowed to the size of a couple of pages in my book.
We are back. My guest this evening, Bill Nell, and we're talking about the very, very odd, very strange event that took place April the 21st right here in the area where I am seated at this moment in Phoenix, Arizona. Very, very strange event. The reason, I mean, it was odd anyway, but the reason that it's even more odd is the story that came out about it being a hoax, and now there seems to be rather ironclad evidence that the story of the hoax is a hoax. All right, now, Bill, when we went away, we were talking about some of the details that seemed strange to you, but now, let me get you to do this. There was a response to Cherie from the fire department, Cherie being one of the people who did the investigation and the experiments to see if it could be done in the way that they said it was done. If you have that in front of you, read the response from the fire department.
Hello?
Yes, can you hear me?
Oh, I'm sorry, yes, I apologize. I've been having some phone problems today on and off, so if every once in a while my phone dies a bit, I do apologize. Yes, I do have the, now, she received a response from the assistant fire marshal, and his name is Kevin Roche, and this is what he writes. He writes, Mrs. Tidal, thank you for your message of May 5th, 2008. I'm sorry that it has taken so long for us to respond, but your question generated a lot of discussion among our staff. The fire code does not envision a situation where someone would attach a flare to a balloon and release it. This situation certainly presents hazards that we need to address. There is currently not a section of the fire code that prohibits this activity. We've referred your question to our attorney to draft appropriate language to be added to the fire code. Please let me know if I can provide you with any additional information, and he signs his name. Again, this was an email, and Sheree has the original email. So what they're basically saying, you know, is this kind of falls between the cracks. Now, I don't necessarily see that. How do you feel about it, Kevin, you know, having been in law enforcement and such? What's your opinion on it?
Well, first, let me say that if law enforcement officers of any stripe, any brand, whether we're talking about fire marshals or if we're talking about police, sheriff's departments, whatever, if they want to arrest you, then they can make the case with existing laws. Let me give you a quick example. In Louisiana, one of the big industries there is catfish. They have catfish farms. Now, they have laws on the books against stealing. Okay? There's a law against theft. But there is also a law against stealing catfish. The penalty for stealing catfish is the same for simple theft. All right? Now, if they did not have this law on the books about stealing catfish, and you went out and stole catfish, do you think they would charge you with simple theft? Yes, they would. Why? Because it does apply. Now, we have laws on the books here against open burning without a permit. When you light a flare, are you... Are you doing open burning? And do you have a permit for it? If you don't, then that law applies. Now, maybe it is true that there is no law that says thou shalt not attach flares to helium balloons, set them alight, and set them aflight. Maybe there's no law that says thou shalt not do that. But are there laws that do apply? Yes, there are. Could the person, if he actually did this, be prosecuted under those laws? Yes, he could. So that's my assessment of it.
Well, you know, this is one of the things. That's kind of how I felt. But again, you're the expert in that area, so I figured, you know, you're the person that needed to answer that.
Well, let me say I'm not an expert in the area, but I do have some experience in the area. It's just like, you know, there may not be a law that says you can't hit a guy in the head with a baseball bat, but there are laws that say you cannot pick up any type of instrument and strike a person. You see what I'm saying? And so there may not be a law that says no flares with helium balloons. That law may not exist, true enough. But are there laws in existence that do apply? Yes, there are.
See, my take on the whole thing is a very simple one. I believe that they were hoping that the hoaxer story would put an end to this, put it to bed, you know, end of story. No more problems. You know, this time they had it down very nicely. It was like a well-oiled machine because they had, what, 10 years since the last event to practice getting it right after the March 13th, 1997 Phoenix lights, which left so many questions and still does unanswered. What they basically hoped was that this hoaxer story would simply put it to bed, but actually it didn't. And, you know, granted, you didn't really have a lot of mixed statements and first we did, then we didn't things coming from the Air Force. They simply said we didn't have any military aircraft up that night, which, again, is in question, actually. But regardless of that, let's put that aside for a minute. Put everything else aside for a minute. I believe that they were hoping that a story like this coming so soon after the event, literally the next day on April 22nd, would put it the whole thing completely over with. But now, when we start looking at this a little bit closer, and I don't think they thought people were going to do that. Of course, you know, when it comes to the, you know, mainstream media, one of the problems you have, and this is a scenario that we saw with the Stephensville, Texas, Erath County lights, it was the same thing. You know, the first day that the lights made the national news, which actually was a significant amount of time after they originally appeared, everybody was all excited. I know CNN and Fox News ran the thing all day. And then the following day, when the Air Force basically issued a release saying, well, you know what, we originally said we didn't have any jets in the sky, but we actually did. We made an error. You know, it's like I've told you before on your show, and I've said it many times to different people. When it comes to UFOs, the mainstream media never met a government press release they didn't like. You know, they just want a five-second soundbite answer to the problem. They don't want to go investigate. They're not going to check out the press release. They're not going to do anything. And so this, man, this explanation, and especially in Phoenix, which is, you know, let's be honest about it, it's a government town. You've got Luke Air Force Base, you know. You're not going to really rock the boat too much there. And if you work in the media and you ever want to be invited to the base again, you know, you're gonna not rock the boat there. But at any rate, the bottom line is this. It didn't end. And it wasn't a good explanation. And now there's more questions because now, just to give an example, when Cherie tried to recreate the experiment, one of the things she did was she tried to find the 36-inch diameter latex balloons that this person claimed they bought in the Phoenix area. Well, apparently she wasn't able to get any. She had to order some from Los Angeles because there were none available right in that size in the immediate area. Okay, you know, maybe he found some little store somewhere. That's not a big thing that had him. Or maybe he had him sitting in his basement. Who knows? Maybe he just fudged that particular part of the story. But then he says he tied the flare to a fishing line and that, you know, and basically it lifted, you know, lit the flare and the balloon lifted up. Well, when they tried recreating it, the flare could not be lifted up by the balloon. So, again, you had problems with this story.
Well, here's another thing. The report lists the expenses of doing the experiment. And Cherie and Nathan, who recreated this event, or tried to, in other words, they used the materials that he said he used and tried to see if it would work, and it would not work. But in the expenses, it took $25 of helium to fill that balloon to capacity.
That's right.
There were five of these things. Do you think a guy's going to spend $130 to to hoax this thing? I mean, you know, if it could even be done, $130 just to have a laugh? I doubt it.
It just doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, and again, there have been so many professionals that have kind of chimed in on this and said, well, you know, just the idea of one person even doing it by themselves, it would be problematic. It's not an easy thing to do. But, you know, we have to put this in perspective. You know, one of the things that happened prior to the Internet, you know, in the old days, as it were, we tended to look at UFO events on a very regional or even local scale. You know, it's like when the Phoenix lights came along, everybody was focused on that. But the original Phoenix lights were not by themselves. You know, there had been lights seen earlier the month before and even the week before in other parts of Arizona, Mexico, New Mexico, California. You know, but now that we have the Internet and we can kind of correlate all these reports coming at one time, we find out other things were happening. Now, just to give an example, one of the things that was happening around the same time that these lights appeared on April 21st in Phoenix was that lights were appearing in many, many other places. I mean, you had lights appearing in Kokomo, Indiana, where in that particular case, debris was falling all over the place. And once again, we had the old, we're doing Air Force training flights explanation for it. Although, if you look at the pictures that were taken, I've never seen jets that look like that. You had, at this almost identical same time, lights appearing in Granville, Massachusetts. By the way, if you want to see these photos, you go to newsletter.ufoguy.com. Instead of typing in www, just go to newsletter.ufoguy.com.
Okay, we are into a break, so we're going to have to pause here. But when we come back, I want to hear more about things that were happening around the country and around the world around that same time. All right, folks, we'll be back right after this.
Get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com.
We are back. I am talking with Bill Nell, and we're talking about this latest Phoenix Light event. It happened April the 21st, and, you know, we talked about it at the time. We talked about it that week here on the show. And I think the next week as well, we talked about it once or twice. And there have been some new developments. The new developments are that Bill wrote an article about it. Responding to that article, two people got together and did an experiment to see if, in fact, the hoax story could even be redone. In other words, could you do it? Would it work? And what they found is it would not. Now, Bill, when we went away, we were talking, you were talking about some of the other events, other sightings that took place around the country. Are you with me, Bill? Hello, Bill. Well, it seems that we have lost him. All right. Well, we'll see. He said he was having some problems with his telephone. We'll see if he comes back online here in just a moment. If he does, we will continue with him. If he does not, we will try to reestablish contact with him and continue thereafter. But this latest event, April the 21st, actually happened while I was on the air. And so I didn't see it, but it apparently happened right close to me here. And people in this area, or some of the people in this area, saw it. And so, you know, if I had been out that night, I would have seen it. Well, I think what we're going to do is we're going to try to reestablish contact with Bill. We will do that as we continue. Now, let me tell you that we are going to open up the telephone line and allow you to call in and hopefully talk to Bill. Yeah, we got him back. Okay, Bill, are you with me now?
Yeah, sorry about the phone gremlins.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm not surprised, actually. Nothing at this point surprises me, Bill. Nothing. I wish I could tell you what has been going on here. I cannot, not yet. But I will tell you that there has been very, very high strangeness here. And at some point, perhaps I can divulge the information. All right, now, you were talking about some of the other incidents that took place around the country about the same time. So let's continue with that.
Okay, if you back up about 7 days prior to the April 21st Phoenix Lights event, and you go back to April 15th, which was a Tuesday night, you had a bunch of people, and I'm not talking just a few people. I'm talking that sometime around 10:45, you had over 146 calls coming to the emergency operator center up in the area of Kokomo and Logansport, Indiana. Now, this is up in northern Indiana. And people basically reported seeing strange lights in the sky. Now, you have to remember something and put it in perspective. When the Air Force says to people, well, we were flying training flights, you know, they use the same training areas pretty much all the time. So people in those areas get used to this. But what they don't tell you when they issue these self-serving press releases is, you know, night training missions in those particular areas, and at that time of year, are very rare. They're almost never done. So the nighttime thing was strange. But then again, when they do occur, people are used to the sounds, are used to the lights. Now, what people reported seeing on that particular night was a huge explosion and a gigantic fireball. Now, you know, when things explode, they explode. And unless you're talking about some incredibly bright crack of lightning, which I think most people would know the difference, there's got to be an explanation for a huge explosion and the sound and the corresponding sound that goes with it. So they actually dispatched a number of firefighters, police, you know, basically all the first responders went out there to see what was going on. And we're talking an area that was near US 31 and 300 North. You're talking about an area that also was in the downtown area of Kokomo. Now, downtown, they claimed there was a very distinctive and odd metallic smell that filled the entire downtown area right around the time this happened. There was no aircraft reported missing. So this wasn't something that happened, or at least that we know about, with the Air Force or private aircraft, you know, civilian aircraft, commercial aircraft, none of the above. So the standard explanations for this, you know, weren't fitting very well. However, a lot of stuff, and I'm using that term because I don't know what else to say, that looked almost like spider webs started falling all over the place. Now, if you've been in UFO research as long as I have, you know that people tend to call that angel hair. It's a slightly radioactive and very unusual type of debris, and it's often seen after a major UFO sighting. What it is, we don't know. People have had it in their freezers for an extended amount of time. You can freeze it, but if you don't, generally speaking, and it was pretty cold on those particular nights, by the time things warm up the next day, it'll just melt away. It could be an atmospheric phenomenon, but no one's ever proved that. It's not something that we expect to come flying out of the sky, and it's only ever happened or appeared in conjunction with UFO sightings. So this is definitely a case of high strangeness involving strange lights being seen in the sky. Now, I've got on the website at newsletter.ufo.com, UFOguy.com, that is, you can basically go there and you can see the pictures of the Kokomo lights and, you know, see what you think, kind of decide for yourself. But they look very similar to some of the video that was taken in Stevensville, other places around the country. Now, that's case number one. But you've also got lights that were seen in Granville, Massachusetts. You had some incidents that took place off the coast of Jersey where lights were seen. You know, this was definitely not an isolated incident. You know, in the old days, we used to call these UFO flaps. Basically, that's a time when many different UFOs appear in a large region of the country, a segment of the country, for an extended period of time. Now, from my reckoning, we've been in a flap for about a year and a half because, you know, long before the Stevensville lights kind of made the news, people have been seeing strange lights for, like I say, for about a year and a half now, and just a lot of it has gone unreported. You know, it's been piecemeal coming in over the internet and coming into websites like mine. You know, if people have a sighting to report, they can use our online reporting sign and online reporting form and such, and let us know about it. And really, those one thing that happened that I thought was pretty interesting when all these light stories started coming out of Phoenix and Stevensville and the other places, I started to get quite a few reports from other people that said they saw lights in their area. So again, I think we're in a UFO flap, and I really wish people wouldn't look at the Phoenix thing anymore as a hoax or even an isolated incident.
Well, you know, there are a lot of people that look at the video and determine from looking at the video that, this could be flares. Well, one of the things that we want to point out, I mean, I pointed this out previously, but I want to point this out again. I want to underscore this. They said that this guy attached traffic flares to helium-filled balloons and set them alight and aflight. And I want to remind you that he attached them, according to the report, he attached them using monofilament fishing line, and that stuff melts when you get heat anywhere near it. That means these flares, long before they would have reached the altitude where they were videotaped, would have already burned the monofilament line and would have already dropped to the ground. And yet there's no, absolutely no testimony that these things ever dropped to the ground. Another thing is that the purpose of a traffic flare is illumination. That's what it's for. And while it would not have illuminated at that altitude, would not have illuminated the ground very much, if at all, it would have illuminated that balloon that was supposed to be just above it. And you would have seen very clearly that, and you would have also seen traffic flares put out a horrendous amount of smoke. And you would have seen the smoke trails. So whatever that was, I don't buy the traffic flare story. I don't know what it was, but I'm pretty sure I know it was not traffic flares. Now, they tried to get the balloon. Well, we're into a break. We'll get to that when we come back. We'll open the telephone lines and the Skype line on the other side of this break. Don't go away, folks.
kitchen time. Some are mistress, some are empties. And I remember some in my own life. Put a little youth in heart's confession and reach down to your soul. We all need to look much deeper.
Call Kevin Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
All right, we are back. Let me remind anyone who plans to Skype in, if you're going to Skype, first of all, make sure you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada. If you're inside of the USA, inside of Canada, we have an 800 number for you. It's toll-free. We pay for the call, all right? Please use that. If you're going to Skype us, the Skype address is kevin.smith.show. But before you decide to Skype us, turn off the player because it will not work if you're using the same computer to Skype us as the same computer that you're using the player on, all right?
We're talking with Bill Nell, and Bill, I'll hold my question that I had. Are you with me?
Yes, I am.
Okay, just checking.
And again, I apologize. I want to apologize in advance for the phone gremlins. I have cable phone, so that's through my cable system. It's been on and off all day, so if it does go out, I just want to apologize in advance.
All right. Okay, so let's go to the telephone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Oh, yes, it's Kevin from Iroquois Falls, Ontario.
Yes, Kevin.
Yes, how's it going, Bill? How's it going, Kev?
Good.
Hi, Kevin, how are you?
I'm doing all right. I haven't yet spoken with you yet, Bill. How are you? It's a pleasure to finally speak with you. You know, the thing about the Phoenix Lights, the recent Phoenix Lights, I know for a fact that they are UFOs. I know you don't like that misnomer, Kev, but
use it all the time.
Oh, of course.
It's in the sky, and I don't know what it is. It's unidentified, and it's flying.
Well, I know for a fact that it was not a hoax at all, because the same darn lights were seen up above here, above Iroquois Falls, back at the end of February. If you remember when I was on the air here, mm-hmm. live as it was happening, Bill.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? Well, that the same kind of orbs that were seen above Phoenix on April the 21st. Well, this time it was only one of them, but it was the exact same color, the exact same size, and exact same distance in the air. So I just got to tell you that I know for a fact, at least for myself and the people of this town, that we know that that was not a hoax.
All right. Thanks for the call.
All right. Have a good night, guys.
All right. Yeah, it's something that's been seen around, not just... It's not just something that happened in Phoenix, as you were pointing out. Now, I was about to ask this question. Cherie and Nathan, the two people that filed this report, actually physically tried to do what was reported as the method for the hoax. And they were not able... This balloon, which was the same size, and a traffic flare, which was a 15-minute flare, the balloon was not able to lift the flare off the ground. Is that correct?
That's correct. See, one of the things that people don't understand is, apart from the entire, and by the way, again, I encourage people to go to newsletter.ufoguy.com and really look at the photos they took, because they actually took photos of their experiment. Now, we talked earlier how it was an expensive process. It wasn't cheap. I think we decided it was around, what about $130 to do the whole thing?
Well, that's just for the helium.
Right.
Then you've got to buy the flares, and you got to buy the balloons. So, you know,
so technically, what do you think, about $150?
Easily.
So it's not something that you could just kind of do from stuff laying around in your garage or something. You know? So that alone makes it interesting. But you know what? Even before the report came out, and again, I admonish people to read the report because they really need to do that. It's excellent. One of the people that I first contacted when I saw the video was a gal named Kelly Atwood. Now, she is a professional photographic software expert. If you go to Walgreens or any of the big chain CVS drugs, you know, where they do photographic development, she is one of the people that tweaks all of their machines. In other words, she goes around and makes sure that the software loaded into those machines is working like it should be. So she really knows a lot about how photographs are supposed to look and what people are supposed to see on them. Now, over the years, she's done quite a bit of work on UFO photos and video because, you know, one of the problems we started having in the computer age was everybody started saying, well, that could be a UFO photo or it could be Photoshop, you know, and so on. And I understand that. I mean, yes, there's no question. I mean, I'd say a good, these days, you know, when I get UFO photographs emailed to me, a good half of them turn out to be just so ridiculously fake, it's not even funny, and you can see it. But here's the point. She took a look at the video that was taken and some of the stills from it, and she said a couple of things. First of all, she said, in terms of just photographic, okay, looking at a video, the lights were too bright and the color was wrong for these things to be flares. Now, that's something I didn't know. Again, you know, as a UFO researcher, I'm certainly not the beginning and end of knowledge. What I do is I go to people that know what they're talking about, you know. I bring it to their attention, they come back to me, and then I bring it to the public's attention. And so that was one of the first things. And then another thing she pointed out to me was, she said, the video doesn't show the normal effect that flares would exhibit as they burn. In other words, you should be able to see that effect, especially if you know what you're looking for, like she does, as opposed to just a, you know, a casual observer like myself. So she also mentioned that the lights resembled objects that would have had to been much larger. Now, I know you said about them, you know, basically illuminating off the balloons, but she took that into consideration. So, you know, this is the interesting thing. Now, she lives in Phoenix, by the way, and she wasn't out that night, so she didn't see those lights, but she did see the original Phoenix lights and made a number of statements about those. But, you know, this is the thing that you've got a lot of people that are professionals, people that basically know what they're talking about. You know, we had her, then we had people that were working in the fireworks business, all saying the same thing. They said, you know what, this hoax theory from day one when it came out just simply wasn't washing. Now, I want to mention something else, too, because I think it's somewhat important.
Yeah, okay. Again, let me just tell you, we do have a caller on hold.
Sure, go ahead. I'll come back to it. It's no problem.
All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Okay, this is Louis from Connecticut, Kevin.
Okay, Louis.
Good evening to your guest.
Good evening.
Hello, how are you tonight?
Okay, I know of two types of traffic flares. You got one that looks like a nail where you can peg it into the ground, and you have another type like a bipod, okay, where you stretch the legs and you put it on the road. Now, if they had a fissure a wire on there, you would have to stretch it, you have to strike it, and it, before you even let that balloon in the air, it would melt the fissure line before you even get up, because now you got to stretch, the bipod, right,
mm-hmm.
to sit on the road. The other type with the nail wouldn't work because it's only one side where you peg it into the ground, it'd be upside down.
Yep.
You know, right? So the only way one you can use is the bipod, and that is up. So when you strike it, it'll be sitting up, and it will melt the fishing line right away. Because all that chemical is coming off, and if you get your hand on that chemical, boy, it will give you such a burn that you'll be jumping around.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Absolutely right, Louie. Thanks for the call.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really good point. You know, I think people miss the point of how tough and how much work it would be to actually go ahead and get something like this in the air if you could even do it. You know, and especially in a smaller area with, you know, a smaller backyard with a limited amount of actual space to work with, it just, you know, it never did make sense. So I'm really glad he brought up that particular explanation about the flares. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and I'll tell you something else. You remember those neighbors?
Yes.
The ones that were sitting in their backyard?
Yes.
You strike, it's nighttime, you strike a traffic flare in your backyard to do this thing, it's going to light up your whole backyard.
Oh, that was one of the things they said right away. In fact, what they gave this analogy. They said that, you know, around the 4th of July, of course, people are not supposed to do it, but they invariably launch fireworks. And one of the things that's a bane of their existence, they said, was these people that launch these bottle rockets, you know, because they can start fires and do.
Yeah.
So, especially during a very dry time. I mean, you know, so, you know, now a bottle rocket is not especially bright. It really isn't. And yet, at the same time, they're able to see these things with no trouble and see exactly where they land. Can you imagine a flare, how bright that would be in terms of being just two backyards away and how easy it would be for them to see it? And again, they reiterated, you know, when my friend spoke to them, and I believe that, as I said, if you read Cherie's report, it's pretty much the same thing. There were a lot of people. It was a beautiful evening. There were a lot of people out that night in the neighborhood. Some were out in the street. Some were out in front of their house. You know, some were cleaning out their cars, somewhere in their backyard. There were just a whole pile of people around, and I would think personally, if someone was launching something like that up in the sky, there had to have been some calls from that neighborhood, which there were not, into the 911 line, saying, look, we got some crazy person over here, you know, launching, you know, flares or something up in the sky, and we're just concerned about it.
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely right. In the video, you can see the strobe light of what appears to be, because of the way it moves, perhaps a helicopter up flying around those things, checking them out. Have you heard anything about that?
Well, see, there's another thing that is very, very odd. Now, you may recall that almost immediately after the hoax story came out, one of the we don't really know who it was, but and again, this is one of these shady media source things. The media and the mainstream media there in Phoenix claimed that a police helicopter pilot saw the things and said they were flares connected to balloons. Now, they have yet to produce the police helicopter pilot. They've yet to produce the name, the person, when they were flying, why they were flying. I mean, you know, when law enforcement vehicles are up in the sky, there's got to be some accounting for that. There's got to be a reason for it. They had to have been doing something. You know, they're not just flying around for the sake of flying around. And no one seems to be able to provide an accounting for that. So once again, you know, who was up there? We don't know. Was it a you know, civilian helicopter? Was it a military helicopter? Was it a traffic copter? Was it a, you know, just somebody, you know, traffic coppers go around picking up, you know, night deposits from banks in some cases. I mean, choppers are used for everything today. It could have been literally anything and everything in terms of a helicopter. But the point is, I find it interesting that that was never verified, and they never produced the pilot. So again, you've got all these stories, and it's just, you know, the whole hoax story makes no sense. Another thing, too, I'd like to point out, and again, to reiterate, you didn't just have the sightings over Phoenix. You had sightings within a 10-day span over Indiana, New Jersey, Massachusetts, and other parts of Arizona. And one thing that happened that really disturbed me was a sighting that occurred over Decatur, Alabama. Now, did you hear about that, about the white spherical object?
Yes, but let's get into that. Go ahead.
Okay. Basically, on April 25th, strange lights started to appear in the Decatur, Alabama area. Now, for those that are unfamiliar, almost everybody knows where Huntsville, Alabama is. You know, you've got a NASA facility there, a very, very huge government presence in the town. You've got an arsenal, you know, all kinds of things. Well, apparently, right around 11 o'clock, you had people that were reporting these two very large bluish-white lights that appeared in the sky. I mean, there were calls coming in from all the areas. And one thing that was interesting was one of the people that happened to get a very close view of this kind of white spherical object was a person named Cody Terry. Now, they were a student at, I guess, the Bob Jones High School in Madison, which is nearby. And she was basically going, I guess, going home from a friend's house. And she saw this thing, and the thing came so close to her that she literally ran her car off the road. You know, she slammed on her brakes, went into a spin, and the car went off the road a bit. Now, after she got it, you know, back together and got out of the car, she said that one of the lights moved into the other, and it became one huge, extremely bright circle of blinding light. It almost reminds us of what happened back in January in Stevensville, where they saw the one huge, bright, you know, burning object in addition to all the others that were seen at various times. Well, basically, this thing appeared to crash. Now, when we say crash, I don't know if the word crash is correct, but it landed. And where it landed in an facility that had a swimming pool. It's called the Aquadome. Apparently, this is a recreational facility. And it's right next door to Brookhaven Middle School. And she went and got her friend. And her friend, his name was Zach. And both of them went over to this facility. And by the time they got there, the place was just packed. You know, there was police, fire vehicles, and an ambulance, and there was a helicopter. So as they tried to get close to it, you know, the closest they could get was near the helicopter, which had landed by that time. So they're looking at it, and eventually they saw something which they described as a huge white pearl. That when I say huge, not huge, huge, maybe twice the size of a basketball, that was put on a stretcher, loaded into the ambulance, and taken away. Now, the Decatur Fire Department trucks were involved in this in the sense that they went ahead and they escorted the ambulance out of the area. They were going towards Huntsville. But, of course, you know, that doesn't make really a lot of sense because why would you need that? I mean, and so this thing comes down. They recover it. You've got black military helicopters circling overhead while all this was going on. You've got people on the ground recovering this thing. It's taken away. And, you know, pretty much the next day and even that night, the local news just reports a UFO sighting. They say virtually nothing about the recovery of this object. Now, I'll grant you, this could have been something that the government was playing around with, you know? But I always have problems when people start talking about these secret government projects flying over, you know, areas that are populated like that, especially Huntsville, where we know there's a huge government presence. I mean, you wouldn't want to, you know, draw attention to a place like that. I mean, it's like, I'm from Long Island, so in Long Island, years and years ago, we're talking 40, 50 years ago, they might have tested new aircraft that Grumman was building, but in the last 30 or 40 years, especially the last 30 years, What they've pretty much done is simply design the stuff out there and test it elsewhere. I mean, they've done work on the Trident sub, but you don't see any Trident subs being built out there, you know. So tested in the waters off of Long Island for that matter.
What was this white pearl?
Well, that's how they describe it. Now, here's an interesting thing. Of course, you know, again, we have the Internet doing what it does best. Somebody captured a photo on Google, from Google Earth, of a white pearl device over, of all places, Florida, back in 2005.
You are reading the news.
A place called Magnolia Park in Florida.
This
and it was probably
recording.
About 20,000 feet up in the sky. It looked like a classic pearl-like object. And it was very unusual, and people, you know, kind of, they've passed the photo around. I've gotten it a number of times from a number of different people. And according to the witness, again, Cody Terry is a female student at Bob Jones High School in Madison, Alabama. She says that the picture of the white pearl that was photographed in 2005 over Magnolia Park, Florida, is the closest thing she can say looked like what they put on the stretcher and recovered, again, from the Decatur area, Decatur, Alabama. Again, on April 25th, 2008. Now, that's just 4 days after the Phoenix event. And bear in mind, that also involves strange lights. So you're talking, once again, let's just kind of recap for a second. You've got, within a 10-day span, Indiana, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Arizona, and Alabama strange lights. And, you know, correlations. Pretty much the same lights being seen over all these different areas, and then a strange object recovered. And once again, almost identical in each and every area, the news media skirting the issue, you know, covering it slightly, not talking to the actual witnesses in the case, almost disinterested. Now, you know, not for nothing, but if something came down in my town, you know, at a local pool, you know, and I were a news person, you know, I don't care what the government would say or do. I'd be there wanting to cover it. It's news. But
yeah,
apparently,
but
you know.
Be up against, you would then be up against the editor of the publications or the producer of the news shows. And whatever you discovered and whatever you reported may very likely never see the light of day, and that may be what happened.
Well, that's true, and you know, I've seen that as a growing phenomenon where, okay, a story is killed, and then after it's killed, the retribution starts. Like with Stevensville, you saw that, you know, like I said, within a few days of that report, once they got the story that there were jets in the area, they just attributed all the lights and things to the jets, and then the retribution started. Right away, you had somebody from the local legislature or from the local town council talking about how that the media was being irresponsible covering the event. Next thing you know, Angela Joyner, who was the one who originally came out with the story about Stevensville, you know, she doesn't get fired, but she gets pretty much forced out, you know. Then you get Ricky Sorrells and these other people with helicopters flying over their property day and night 24/7, jets, you know, going down and flying over their property, people coming up to their door dressed in military uniforms. You know, once the press gets out of the area, once they kind of close down the subject, that's really when the government goes to work, and that's been a really growing phenomenon, and you wouldn't think it would happen in this day and time. I mean, you hear about the old Roswell UFO crash in New Mexico where people were threatened and stuff, and, you know, hey, if you talk about it, they're going to find your bones in the desert, but you don't expect that to occur anymore, but I guess it's still going on.
Well, you know, we certainly have heard about that in the Stephenville story. I mean, that's certainly is part of the story. That's Ricky Sorrell's testimony. But, you know, you don't hear about that kind of thing happening very much. I mean, that's the first I've heard of someone going through all of that harassment in a very, very, very long time.
Well, I think a lot of people don't talk about it. I mean, I've been involved in this for many, many years, and, you know, I've always been fortunate or cursed. I'm not sure which, but I seem to always be in the right place at the right time in terms of UFOs. I don't know if, you know, people are just drawn to me because I study them and they want to talk to me about them, but, I mean, I can tell you story after story where people were literally threatened. I mean, I remember, are we pretty close to a break?
Well, not real close, but I tell you what, before we get into that, let's take this call. We'll do the call, then the break, and then I want to get back into this harassment thing.
Okay.
All right. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Oh, this is Chris from Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Yeah, Chris.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
I just want to ask real quick.
Good evening.
I know out here in Grand Rapids, the local news uses a lot of what they call sky cams. We have them mounted on buildings, and they use them to report traffic conditions and weather around the area. Were there any places in Phoenix that have these kind of cameras that are around that might have caught any of the event from a different angle at all?
The only cameras that I'm aware of are the Department of Transportation cameras that are aimed down at the highways.
Oh, gotcha. So nothing over the city at all.
No, I'm not aware of any. Are you aware of any, Bill?
No, I've not heard any. You know what? That was one of the first things I thought about. But again, you've got the problem of traffic cams being pointed down. I know they've got that one camera downtown, but I think it was facing the wrong direction. So unless someone comes forward that happened to have a security camera going and just happened to be pointed up in that direction, and no one has yet, I doubt we'll see anything like that.
Gotcha. All right, gentlemen, thank you.
All right, thanks for the call. All right, we've got time to get into this just a little bit. You started to tell us about, we've got about 2.5 minutes here, a harassment incident.
Well, you know, when strange things happen, people tend to not believe them. I mean, I go back to a story that occurred when I was a kid. I was on vacation at the time, so I wasn't home. But I lived in East Meadow, Long Island, New York, and they had just built a new town of Hempstead Pool in our area. Huge pool complex, beautiful area. And basically, a UFO right around midday of classic disc, probably about 50 feet in diameter, hovered above the pool. And after that, the pool water, which, you know, looked like normal pool water, turned a very, very deep red. One of my friends over the years has been a gentleman named Officer Larson. Now, he works for, or did work for before his retirement, the town of Hempstead Department of Public Safety. Now, it's not a police department, but they are peace officers, and they guard all the town buildings, pools, and so on. They have arresting powers. They're just not, you know, normal, regular police in the conventional sense. Now, he was sent to the area. He was a supervisor back in those days, and he was sent to the area along with a detachment of public safety officers to close down the pool and get everybody out. He said they came along, all these maintenance people came, they set up tarpaulins because they had a type of fence where it was wrought iron, you could see through it. So they tarpaulined over all the fences. All these people came in hazmat uniforms. They emptied the pool, scrubbed it down. By the next day, it was open. But, you know, before he left his shift, and his shift was extended, he didn't leave till about 8 o'clock that night. And he'd been probably on his shift since about 6 in the morning, you know, hardly had time for a meal. He basically was told by authorities, and that's, he never has told me who the authorities were, and I think partially because he was just very scared about the whole thing. They basically told him, you know what, if you talk about this, you're going to lose your job, you're going to lose your livelihood, you know, you're going to be convicted of federal crimes. It was unbelievable what they did to these people. Now, bear in mind, this happened at midday. It happened in an area where at that time there were a minimum of, just the town of East Meadow alone, and it's one of many in that area, had about 35,000 people living there. The area collectively, over 100,000, no doubt. Cars going up and down Newbridge Avenue. It's a heavily traveled area, less than a mile from the Long Island Expressway, for those that know Long Island. And the funniest thing was, when we came back from vacation, the FBI was going through our neighborhood. They knocked on our door, along with a lot of other doors, and they said, well, you know, we wanted to let you know that something got loose from Brookhaven National Labs, which is a national laboratory on Long Island, an experiment, if you will, ended up over the pool. I don't know how politely to say it. You know, what to do? Drop.
Okay. Look, we're into a break. And we'll be back right after this. More with Bill Nell and some really amazing stuff. And your telephone calls, 1-800-289-1092, or you can Skype me.
Nowhere, somewhere, anywhere. And when-
Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com.
Call Kevin Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
By the way, let me say, during that last segment, early in the segment, you heard some spurious audio. It's someone sent me a flash message. It had no subject. And when I opened it, it had no return address and no message. It just began producing audio. Isn't that interesting? Okay, we're talking with Bill Nell, and we're talking about basically, primarily, this April the 21st sighting in Phoenix, and of something that the news media reported later, the next day, they reported that it was hoaxed and that it was traffic flares attached to helium-filled balloons, and that, as we now know, is full of gas. That's all it is. It's full of gas. Can't be done with the type of balloon and traffic flares and monofilament line that were said to have been used in the story. Now, the larger balloons that are used for weather observation perhaps could do it. I don't know. But you don't buy those down at the local toy shop. All right, Bill, you were telling us about this incident that happened back in your hometown, and the officer that was harassed and threatened. But, you know, that was a long time ago, and we used to hear about those things from years gone by, but we don't hear about them much anymore. People aren't reporting that sort of thing much anymore. We'll come back to that in just a moment. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, my name is John.
Hello, John.
I'm calling from Long Island, New York.
Yes, John.
Is this the UFO?
Yep, you're on the Kevin Smith Show. You're on the air.
Oh, okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to say I'm in Long Island myself right now, but when I was about 15 years old, I lived in Staten Island, and I seen an object that was very large. It had silver and multicolored lights flashing and spinning, and I tried to deduce it as a flare, a helicopter, you know. I tried to say it was everything but what I thought it eventually was. And then I seen it just drop like a rock, maybe 500 feet. And then it went off on an angle. And then it came straight across. And then it disappeared in front of my eyes. This was around in 1969. And I think there were other people that had seen it. In those years, it was 68 to 71 in those years.
Well, Staten Island is highly populated, so I would assume that there were a great many people who saw it. Did you see anything about it in the newspapers later?
No, but it happened in the middle of the night, and it was like on the edge. It was towards in the New Jersey area. I'm sure people must have seen something, I don't recall seeing anything in the papers. I think years later I heard something about it.
Now, were you by yourself or were there people with you?
By myself.
By yourself.
and it was crystal clear night. There was, you know, like I said, I tried to say it was a helicopter, it was a plane. It says planes don't stand still. You know, helicopters stand still, but they don't have those kind of lights, and they certainly don't move in that kind of, they don't just drop like a rock. And they don't just go off on an angle, like on a, almost like a, you know, what's that phase angle theta, that type of an angle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just...
Didn't move like anything you'd ever seen, huh?
No, nothing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wasn't into UFOs, not at that point. That's when I started getting involved in it and interested in it. But, of course, I was afraid to tell anybody, and I was scared to shit. I said, please don't take me. I thought they were watching me, you know.
Well, let me ask you a question a little bit along a different line. Are you a first-time caller?
Yes.
Well, let's play some applause for you, all right? Yeah, let's see. Well, it's not going to play it. Okay, well, let me applaud for you. I'm glad you called.
Thank you.
All right, man, thanks for the call.
You're welcome.
Yeah, lots of people have seen lots of strange things.
You know, Kevin, sometime we're going to have to do a show just about UFO sightings over New York City, because, I mean, I lived there for years. And I always laugh when the skeptics come out and say, well, you know, if these things are real, why don't they just come and appear over large cities? Well, they do. And if people knew some of the things that I investigated, not just myself, but many other people, they'd be stunned. I mean, Staten Island is a place where, as one of the five boroughs of New York City, or one of the five areas that are part of the city, and basically, you're talking about a place where UFO sightings have been reported for over 200 years. Sightings, landings, all kinds of crazy stuff. So, you know, it's the problem is people always say, and I know this happens in Phoenix, and you know it does, people say, well, there's so many planes in the air. How can you be sure it was a UFO and not an aircraft? Well, because when you live in a place like Phoenix, the planes are constantly over your head. You can't look up without seeing one. My goodness, Sky Harbor has gotten so crazy and busy, you know. It's become such a big hub. You know what the planes look like during the day, and you know what they look like at night. You know what the police helicopters look like. You know what the military aircraft looks like.
And you also know how they sound.
And you, oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, you get a C-130 or something going, yeah, and you know it's there. And the thing is that when you get used to those things, it's almost like an involuntary response for your eyes to be attracted to something that's completely out of the ordinary. So actually, people that are over cities, almost anywhere in the world, are better UFO witnesses than people that are out in the country, because they see stuff in the air all the time, and they're used to it, and when they see something different, they know the difference.
Yeah, and I will repeat something that I say on this show rather frequently, and that is, when someone says, well, that witness was not a trained observer. Okay. Not everyone is, but that witness that's not a trained observer has had eyes all of his life. And he knows if it's different from anything he's ever seen before. And, you know, and this is a whole lot of the arguments used by the debunkers, when you just use simple logic, fall apart like rotten bread.
Well, one thing that really bothered me growing up, I grew up in an Air Force family, so, you know, although my father retired, I was born late in the life of my parents, so my father did retire when I was very young, but he had pilots coming over for barbecues and stuff all the time. And I mean, one of the things that made me crazy was I'd go to school, and any time the subject of flying saucers or UFOs came up, it would be the same old thing. Well, you know, most of these people are not trained observers. Well, you know what? I had a problem with that, because I had pilots coming over our house talking about incredible, you know, encounters they had. My father was not a volunteer fireman, but he was involved with fundraising and stuff for the volunteer fire department in East Meadow and in Long Island. And I used to hang out at the firehouse, and I'd hear these first responders talk about strange stuff they saw. One time I heard a Nassau County policeman, he was there at a firehouse barbecue, and he was talking about how that when he was heading out to Patchogue on Long Island, he was stopping at a red light, and a huge luminous white object, which we talked about something like that similar earlier this evening, came over his car, stuck his head out. He ended up later with all these red blotches all over his face, and he couldn't explain it. When he got to his sister's house and told her about it, she was only about a few minutes' ride from there, she said, "Oh, well, we see those things all the time. We call them fisherman's lights because we used to think that they were the lights on the fishing vessels that were going out at night, but since they tend to come right around above our house and in our backyard, maybe they're not." But, you know, it's amazing. Now, these were trained observers. These are, you know, law enforcement officers that are out day and night. They, you know, different shifts. They know what's out there. First responders, you know, they're out day and night. They're just out all the time, and they tend to know something different when they see it. Pilots, obviously trained observers. And don't you get a kick how that kick out of the fact that pilots, you know, they're highly trained, highly motivated, intelligent people until they see a UFO. Then they're delusional, or they're suffering from mental problems, or they've got depression issues, or maybe they, you know, there was some kind of a medical problem with their eyes that day. But the rest of the time, they're fine. If they saw anything else in the sky, they would have been the same professional, wonderful people that, you know, guard us and protect us day in and day out, every day of the week, until they see a UFO. Then they can't be trusted. They can be trusted if they see an enemy aircraft, but not a UFO. It's a ridiculous explanation, and it drove me crazy, because when I grew up, I had these two realities. The reality is that, look, there is something going on, and the reality that nobody wants to know about what's going on. You know, they just want to keep pointing out to these ridiculous explanations. But I can tell you firsthand and tell you true that the military takes this stuff very seriously.
All right, we have to take this break very seriously, and we will be back right after this with your calls, your questions, your comments, whatever it may be.
Well, I'm ready to
get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com.
Call the Kevin Smith Show at 1-800-289-1092.
Welcome back. We're talking with we're talking with Bill Nell. And let me say, the reason that came to mind is Bill and Dick Criswell used to work together and now are in separate organizations. But the two names are always linked in my mind, and I apologize for that to both of you gentlemen, but Bill Nell is with us this evening, and we're talking about this Phoenix sighting that took place April the 21st, and we're talking about some other sightings and things that go on around these sightings. Now, Bill, we were about to get into some of the debunking stuff, and you were saying that you know for sure that the U.S. military takes UFOs seriously.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, growing up in a military family, I mean, it wasn't just what I experienced when I was a kid, but it's been since then. But just to give you an example, you know, it's actually pretty funny. By the way, that pool incident I talked about earlier took place in 1966. If people want to read about that kind of stuff on my website, I've got all the free articles at ufoguy.com, and they can read the report on the Phoenix lights. But, you know, I think it was around 1971. I had moved to Florida. I was living there. And a friend of my dad, who were also in the military, we called him the Colonel, and he used to cut his lawn. And I had an opportunity to write an essay. It was an essay. You had to be 16 years or under to enter this essay contest, and it was about UFOs. So I, you know, wrote a bunch of stuff up, some things that I had done and some, you know, things that I had noticed about UFOs, and I happened to have won the contest. The first prize was a cassette player, and that was a fairly new technology in those days, so I was glad to have it. And the funny thing was, somehow or another, I guess some of the people that the colonel knew were into UFOs, and after a few months, they sent him a copy of the essay that was published in this tabloid that used to be published in New York City. And, you know, he called me in, he showed it to me, he looked me straight in the eye, said, did you write this? I said, yes, I did. He said, well, it was published. I said, yeah, it was. You know, I won the essay contest. I wasn't about to apologize for that, and after that didn't want me to cut his lawn anymore. This is the kind of stuff, I can assure you, that there are people in the military that this subject scares the daylights out of them. And there's basically two schools of thought. Two schools are, one, you know, let's cover this all up and tell nobody nothing, and the other one is more like, well, let's look into this, find out what's really going on, and try and do something about it. So you know, depending on who you talk to or who you happen to deal with, those are the two sides you're going to be dealing with in terms of the military, but every one of them take this stuff seriously. I mean, you think of people like Colonel Corso, who didn't come forward with his stories about Roswell. He wrote the book The Day After Roswell, and he didn't come forward with his stories until he was literally dying of cancer. You know, I mean, he didn't want to lose his pension. He didn't want his family affected. There's a lot of pressure the government can put on people if they want to. I mean, I remember when Bob Lazar came forward with his stories about Area 51, and as soon as he did, he received a call from his former supervisor, and the supervisor basically said to him, well, now we're going to get you. And they did. I mean, everything about the guy, his identity, his you know, university degrees, his former work, you couldn't find a record. The poor guy, all he had to prove that he ever worked there was a W-2. Luckily, he had that and some entries in a government contractor's phone book. That was about it. So when they want to, there's a lot of things they can do and a lot of pressure they can put on individuals, and more so if you're in the military or somehow connected with the government.
Well, I really would hope that we, and I hear what you're saying about it, I would hope that we have gotten past those methods and perhaps were a little bit more enlightened. I mean, we're hearing about them out of the Stephenville thing, and, you know, it's disappointing. They need better script writers. Let's take one more call. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, this is Mustafa from Sweden.
Okay, from Sweden.
Yes.
Well, you definitely are a first-time caller, and my applause is not working, so let me play this. Okay, I played a ta-da. We're glad you called.
Thank you.
What's on your mind this evening?
I have a question.
Yes.
What about UFOs in space? Nobody talks about it. I mean, have you seen a video of NASA secret transmission?
Yeah, I've seen it.
Nobody talks about that video.
Yeah, Bill. What about UFOs in space?
I'm sorry, I really wasn't able to hear the caller. Could you repeat the question?
I just did. What about UFOs in space?
I'm sorry, I've got the phone gremlins acting up here. Well, you know, UFOs are seen an awful lot by astronauts. In fact, you know, I talked earlier about the essay contest I entered. Well, what I did was, during the time of the first moon landing, I took my father's reel-to-reel tape recorder, put it on slow speed, and I recorded all the conversations that were broadcast over a radio station in New York City during that mission. Now, at that time, they didn't hold anything back. They broadcast these conversations 24/7 for the duration of the mission. So it was really pretty cool, and historically speaking, pretty darn interesting. But there were a lot of things that, you know, during that mission, for example, we had incidents where strange language was heard over the radio, which no one plane, and Mission Control basically said, well, there's no explanation for the strange sounds that are coming over the radio. Now, to cover the whole thing up, and because this was going out to the public, and they really couldn't shut it off in those days, the astronauts had a little cassette player with music cassettes on it in the cabin, and they literally turned it on and put it up so loud it was blaring so that it would blare out these sounds. Now, they must have had a reason for doing that. And at the same time, we had Buzz Aldrin talking about something coming very close to the spacecraft. You know, I know you've covered these stories before, so I'm not really going to go into details, but we've had the space shuttle astronauts. You know, John Blaha coming forward when he was in, a ham radio operator picked him up when he was up in the shuttle saying we still have the alien spacecraft under observation, you know, and then you don't hear anything else. There's plenty of incidents with astronauts. There's plenty that goes on with NASA that they don't talk about. You know, Dick Hoagland, Richard Hoagland, famous science advisor to Walter Cronkite, a person that studied and so on, has said he's called NASA one of the most deceitful agencies in the United States government. He worked for them. So again, you've got this paranoia in the government that says whenever something happens, we're going to cover up, because I'm assuming that they're concerned that we're all going to go crazy if we're told the truth. But I have to tell you that from my standpoint, things haven't gotten better. They've gotten worse. And I have this fear and certainty that the military is now looking at what we're seeing with all these sightings in terms of an invasion. You know, that's their job, to be concerned about things that come in our skies.
Yeah, that is their job. Unfortunately, it's my job to say that we're just about out of time. We've got about 30 seconds. Let me say to our caller from Sweden, thank you so much. Tell us your first name again.
Mustafa from Sweden.
Mustafa. Okay, you've sent me flash messages before. Yeah, well, it's good to talk with you. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
All right. Well, that's impressive, from Sweden. Okay. Bill, we're just about out of time. I'd like for you to give your web address again.
Yes, go to UFOGuy.com, and you can see the report on the Phoenix Lights. If you want to see it directly, just go to newsletter.UFOGuy.com, and you'll see all that information, along with lots of other stories online.
All right. Thank you for being with us, and stay online with me for just a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, we have come to the end of this show. You don't want to miss tomorrow night's show either. Let me tell you, it will be a blockbuster. All right.
believe me, it will be a blockbuster. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.